Sa esha atma swaparaitya bhudibhir. Turachayanu kramano nirupyate. Muhyanti atvartmani vedavadino brahmahadayo yesha pinati me matim. Svaparecha buddhibir. This is materialistic mentality. Whoa. Well fastened. Stuck, huh? So it is. No, and if this won't move, then we move the whole business higher. Up, up, up. That's about right, wouldn't you say? Okay. Svapara iti. This is my business and that's your business. He's my friend and he's my enemy. This is materialistic mentality. Dividing up into friends and enemies, we categorize the world. Okay, he's my friend, he's my enemy, he's my friend. And we treat our friends well so that they'll stay our friends and do things for us. And we antagonize our enemies and keep them at bay or smash them if we can. But it's all on the basis of mental concoction. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhud vijanata atmatmanyeva nupashyati sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tato navijagupsate. The self-realized person sees Krishna within all living beings and all living beings within Krishna. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhud vijanata. Tatrako mahakashoka ikatam anupashyata. He sees the oneness of all living entities. He doesn't see friends and enemies. Krishna is my friend, and everyone else is part and parcel of Krishna. He sees with that mentality. Otherwise, this friends and enemies business is simply the result of the illusory energy. And especially in Kali Yuga, the governments of the world take advantage of this bewildered bad intelligence and manipulate. This is standard operating procedure. They're your enemies. They're your friends. These people bad. These people good. Attack bad people. Defend good people. All by mental concoction. And we see practically that they switch around. The guys who were the good people became the bad people. The guys who were the bad people, now they're the good people. You have to keep track, because according to government expediency, according to geopolitical advantage and military policy, and friends and enemies periodically switch. My allies become my enemies become my allies. And it's manipulated so that the people are told, oh, these are the bad people, you have to watch out for them. Bad people, good people, they're practically the same people. Now the Middle Eastern, the Muslims in the Middle East, they're the bad people. They hate our freedom. They want to attack everything that we stand for. They're against democracy. They mistreat women. They don't have respect for ecology and whatever else we can throw at them. So they're bad. And since they're bad, we can send our armies over there and steal whatever they have, because it's in defense of democracy, and they're our enemies. And our friends, they're the guys who are going to help us swipe other people's property and use it for our own interests. Friends, enemies, friends, enemies, friends, enemies. By mental concoction. Daite padra padra gyan e mano dharma. E balo e mande sab brahma. This is good, this is bad. This is also mental concoction. Dvaite, in the material world of duality. Badra, badra, gyan. These people are good, those people are bad. These things are good, those things are bad. Shitoshna shukaduka daha. There's no bad or good. What is it? There's nothing either bad nor good, but thinking makes it so. Or nothing either good nor bad, like that. By our mentality, just like water, cold water, in summer we think it's very good, in the winter we think it's very bad. It's the same water, but according to our circumstance we think good or bad. So, Prahlad Maharaj is above all this. He's not thinking, these people are my friends, these people are my enemies. He didn't even think Hiranyakashipu was his enemy. He's seeing Krishna everywhere. Seshatma. He's the super soul. He's within everyone's heart. Not that he's within the hearts of my friends and the devil's in the hearts of my enemies. Krishna's in the heart of all living beings. Therefore, where's the question of friends or enemies? Maybe some people are bewildered by the modes of passion and ignorance. They may be thinking that they're my enemies. But on the spiritual platform, there's no question of friends or enemies. Everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. And Krishna is within everyone. Seishatma svaparej abudhibir. Therefore, a person who's thinking in terms of friends and enemies is a buddhibi. Polite way of saying stupid. A buddhi, not intelligent. That means stupid. Duratyaya anukramano nirupyate. Muhyanti advartmani. And this, these mistakes, misunderstandings, affect even the great followers of the Vedas. Muyanti yatsudaya, even the demigods are bewildered sometimes by the illusory energy. Vedavada. Vedavada means the followers of Vedic literature, or so-called Veda followers. Vedavada rata partanana dasti tivadana. Simply following the Vedic ceremonies doesn't guarantee, it's not the same. I'm following the Vedic ceremonies, I'm reading the texts, but it doesn't mean that I have pure consciousness. That's a different thing. People are very proud, I'm following the Vedas, I'm following the Quran, I'm following the Bible, I'm following this, I'm following that. I'm following the U.S. Constitution. They're very proud. But have they actually understood? The actual person who's actually understood the Vedas sees Krishna everywhere. He sees Krishna within all living beings. Not simply that he knows the books or that he follows the ceremonies. It's a question of consciousness. Therefore, avipaschitaha. What is that? Anyway, Veda Vadarata Parta Nanyadasti Divada. What's the beginning? And next verse, Kamatmana Svargapura. Anyway. They're described as apaschitaha, inexperienced, childish, yamimam pushpitam vacham, prabhadanti avipaschitaha. Those who are attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, and if you do three of these, it's equal to 10 of those. If you do one of those, it's equal to 15 of these. If you do one of these on the full moon day, then you can achieve this. If you do four of these on the Ekadasi, you can go there. If you get do this, you can get that. Kamatmana svargapara. Those who have material desires and want to go to the heavenly planets because they've heard all about how divine it is there, what a higher standard of enjoyment there is, they're described as avipaschit, childish. They don't actually know the purport of the Vedas. Vedaischa sarvairaham eva vedya. By all the Vedas, one has to understand Krishna. Otherwise, what is the use of all that Vedic study? So, muyanti yat surya, even the demigods become bewildered about these things. Brahmadiyo, even Lord Brahma, we see that he sometimes becomes confused also. He thinks that Krishna's an ordinary boy who's entered my Brahmanda. Indra also becomes bewildered. Who is this talkative child that these Brajbasis are listening to? In this way, muyanti yat surya. So, Prahlad Maharaj is Mahajan, therefore. He actually understands the principles of religion because he understands Krishna. So Mahajana Yena Gatasa Panta, we have to follow in the footsteps of devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, the great Mahajanas. Any questions? A little louder, please. We talked about that, I think, the other day, that it's kind of like a sale offer. And sometimes, like a shoe store or something, a clothing store, they have a sale, you know, 50% off on whatever it is, or up to 50% off, which means, like, usually it's 2%, 5%, something might be 50%. Anyway, special sale offer. So why is that? They're attracting customers. Buy at our store. But those who are already customers, they'll buy at the store anyway. 50% off or no 50% off. They're regular customers. So the Shastras sometimes are interested in attracting new customers who may be interested in this kind of a deal, that if you chant this three times, you'll... your enemies will leave you alone, or you'll never be bitten by snakes, or whatever it might be. You'll be eligible to go to the heavenly planets. So the new customers are just, so they may come to hear about Krishna. Otherwise, those who are already addicted to Krishna, they're already customers. They don't need these things dangled in front of them. They're going to hear about Krishna anyway because they're attracted to Krishna. Is that okay?
I read something yesterday about that said, I have no enemies, but I make sure that they're not my friends either. So,
where were you reading that? Not Shastra, some non-Shastric sort. Yes. On the material platform, we also follow that policy. That no one's our enemy and no one's our friend also. Those who are bewildered by the material energy, they're not actually our friends. And they may be favorable sometimes, but we're a little careful that we're not exactly, they're not exactly our friends, those who are attached to intoxication, gambling, meat eating, illicit sex. By comparison to our enemies, they may be our friends, but that's all the relative consideration. So from that point of view, we have no friends or enemies in the material world. Or from another point of view, everyone's our friend. Just we, what is it? Yeah. They say keep your friends close and your enemies closer. But we make no distinctions. We just keep everybody, we see everyone as being friend. Just we have to be a little careful with some of our friends in the material world. Is that okay? The real friend is Krishna. And someone who brings us closer to Krishna is our real friend. Anyone who brings us closer to our real friend is also our friend. And best friend. Yes.
I'm just thinking that when you live and function within an institution, and it's inevitable that you get dragged into these conceptions of friends and enemies or allies and obstacles, because it seems as though you need to make distinctions in order to function and get things done. Like diplomacy always comes in.
That's interesting. You get involved in an institution, then you naturally become influenced by conceptions of enemies and friends and so on.
Yeah, like I was thinking about if you're away from them, like if you're just in the forest or something, from everyone, away from a kind of social structure in that sense, then it's just easy to see everyone, you know, because they have nothing to do with you, they don't affect you.
Well, therefore, those who are, it's an interesting thought because that's how friends and enemies work sometimes. But when I'm alone, it's easier to decide who my friends are going to be. But when I'm in a social group, then my friendships are part of a larger negotiation. You know, well, if you're going to be friend with, you know, like at school, well, if you're going to be, you know, no, you can't be friends with her. If you're going to be friends with her, you can't be friends with us. Right? Is that how it works? Yeah. If you're going to be friends with her, we're not going to be your friends anymore. Or she's okay, but she's friends with such and such, and such and such is drippy. You know, so I don't know, it's something kind of like, in this way people, they calculate, kids learn early how to calculate who's up and who's down in the social register and in terms of who's friends with whom and who you want to ally yourself with. It's very political. Kids are, you know, public schools and private schools are hotbeds of political activity. Schools, universities, corporations, labor unions, almost any social unit, political parties, involve this kind of calculation. So, one who's chanting Hare Krishna maybe want to be a little discriminating or critical of socially negotiated friendships and enmities. That is to say, one may not be so quick to say, well, he's a friend of the institution, he's an enemy of the institution, and so he can be my friend, he can't be my friend. And you really, you're not quite sure why, except that it's some sort of institutional requirement. Excuse me? We never talk to those people. Yeah, if they call us up, we hang up. But it's the same sort of thing that goes on the national level. People are told that such and such people are their enemies, or they're portrayed as enemies, and everybody gets the idea that these people are enemies. Even, religious designations. I was speaking to one of our friends, one devotee, actually his wife's initiated, and he's a very nice devotee also, and doing nice service, but he's on a jag about the Muslims. You know, the Muslims are like responsible for 3/4 of the ills of the world. And it's not evidentially based, it's just on the basis of a certain Hindu view of the world, by which the Muslims, you know, they blew up the Twin Towers, and they're breeding like crazy, and they're trying to take over this, and they're after that, and, you know, whatever's went wrong in the history of the last, in modern history, there's got to be a Muslim involved behind it all. You know, ever since Prophet Muhammad, the Muslims have been responsible, probably, if there's climate, what is it, global warming, probably the Muslims are behind that also. And yet we found that when our temple exploded in Leicester, the people who came forward to help were all the neighbors, who were all Muslims. So the devotees took shelter in Fatima's beauty parlor. And the other, you know, all Muslim neighbors came forward to provide help and comfort for the devotees. You know, so there's an official or unofficial Hindu Muslims are like this kind of picture, but then there's another story. Or even like in America, you know, religious considerations aside, you know, everyone in the Middle East has got a dagger between, you know, under their burqa or in their pants pocket, and they hate Americans, and you know, they're always thinking about how to bring down the United States and all of this kind of stuff. And then you go there, and what are people interested in? Good jobs, good schools for their kids, walking on the beach in the evening when it's cool. Yeah, they're not thinking about overturning the United States or stabbing tourists or, you know, it's madness. But these ideas spread like anything, and people are and it's costly. It's like you're not just talking about prejudice and how terrible it is. You're talking about millions of people getting killed. You're talking about defense budgets. You're talking about tanks running over people's homes. You're talking about serious business here. And it's on the basis of swapara. These are my people. These are the other people. These are our friends. These are our enemies. So it's good to be critically minded and to question these things. You know, are they my friends? Are they my enemies? Why are they my friends or my enemies? Because I belong to the United States of America, or because I'm a registered whatever, or because I've, you know, everybody else says. What exactly is the problem here? Are they really my enemies, or do we have a difference of opinion about something? Maybe we don't even have a difference of opinion. So if one's a little, what is it, self-intelligent, And Shastric intelligence, you know, does it say in Shastra that they're my enemies? Is it that they're declared? Is it a statement of Srimad Bhagavatam that these people are my enemies? What exactly is the issue? So it doesn't mean that one becomes, yeah. So one can be a little intelligent. Why are these people my enemies? I may disagree with them. I may have a completely different view of the world. And in a certain field, they may be my enemies. The Mayavadis are our philosophical enemies. And we don't mix with them because we don't want to get the cooties, as they say in America. We don't want to get... Say that here too? No, it's American. You don't want to get bed bugs or contaminated by their association. So we may function in a certain, even like Kauravas and Pandavas, they're circumstantially enemies. But yet there's a higher vision, a higher platform on which there are no friends and enemies. So ultimately we want to come to that platform. Otherwise, functionally, we're advised that since we're not on that platform, we should see this way, that there's the devotees with whom I should be friendly. There's the demons who I should just avoid. Then there's the innocent that I should help. I should become their friend. That functional distinction. Mahabhagavats, they don't even make that distinction. Everybody's good. Everyone's engaged in the service of Krishna. But that's not a platform we can fake. So we're advised to be on the second class platform, the third class platform. I'm good, everyone else is bad. There's me and God, and everyone else can drop off the face of the earth. So we're advised, the friendship with the devotees, leave the demons alone, help the non-devotees, the innocent persons. Mm-hmm. How would I regard persons who would like to burn religious books? Depends whether it's us or them. If it's us, we're very good. We needed to do that. If it's them, burning religious books. Well, burning religious books. Of course, it's usually, unless people are like very cold and they need to, it's a symbolic aggressive act. It's a symbolic aggressive act where you're no good and so we're going to burn your book or your flag or your, whatever it is that stands for you. Maybe we'll burn you in effigy or whatever it is. So they're bewildered by the illusory energy. They're thinking in that way, friends and enemies and symbolic stuff. They're not Mahabhagavatas. They're not Mahabhagavatas. They may burn other people's books, but their own books aren't that interesting. Our policy is rather than burn other people's books, we'll distribute our books. haven't been following. I know that's a newspaper headline. I'm not quite sure what it's all about, actually. I haven't been following. It's American, I think, right? Yeah. Hmm? Gainesville. Oh. International Burna Koran Day. Hmm. They decided not to do it ultimately. Well, this is, in that case, it's big time Maya, because they've been bewildered by mischievous and manipulative parties to believe that the followers of the Koran are the enemies who've crashed their towers and so on. The real story is something very different. But this is manipulation. Prabhupada summed it up: call the dog a bad name and hang him. Call the dog a bad name and hang him. You've heard the expression? And it's a very typical tactic in warfare or in politics, that you call name, you hang a label on a person and essentially depersonalize him. Now he's no longer a human being. He's a gook, or he's a Jap, or he's a Yid, or he's a this, or he's a that, and so you can do whatever you want because it's no longer on the human level, it's on some symbolic level, because he's an enemy, or he's a this, or he's a that. This is the sort of thing that Prahlad Maharaj is not appreciative of. Persons who are of demonic nature, really, who want to grab and exploit the resources of the material world, mobilize other people by symbol manipulation. Words are symbols. You put a symbol here and you put a symbol there, and then you move the symbols around, and then you get people fired up so that they want to burn a Koran, and then burn the person who's reading the Koran, and then burn the sympathizers of the people who are reading the Koran, and then whatever else it is. So it reflects a undiscerning mentality. What is that? In the Bhagavatam it said that the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to distinguish truth from illusion for the welfare of all. The business of politicians is to confuse the two, to conflate truth and illusion for the benefit of a few. That the people become bewildered. They don't really know what is what. It's slogans and it's pictures and it's themes. You know, it's the motherland or the homeland or the our land or motherland, fatherland, homeland, our land. And, you know, all get the heart all going so that we can act according to the desires of manipulating people and help them profit by at the expense of others. It's pretty nasty. You got to be louder. A fine line between toleration and management. Yeah, well, I mean, actually, you had two things in your question. One was institutional membership, and the other was management, wasn't it? So I addressed one and not the other. Management also, it's good not to see in terms of friends and enemies, but in terms of practicalities. It's not that a person who's acting in a certain way is my enemy, but his actions may be unhelpful for the you know, what we have to accomplish. So it's not that we have to demonize the person or make him an enemy, but come to some sort of practical way of dealing, because we have to go right and he wants to pull left. Maybe not an enemy at all, but somehow or other he has either a way of acting or an idea or whatever it is. That's going to slow us down or not enable us to get the job done or in some way or other. But it doesn't mean he's our enemy. Likewise, the leaders themselves. It goes the same way from the other side. Those who are the rank and file or the outside observers or everything. It's not necessarily that because someone is sitting in the driver's seat, he must be our enemy because he's making decisions that we disagree with. But he has responsibilities. He has to get a job done. And sometimes it means that, you know, our interest or our policy or whatever it is doesn't get the attention or the we think it should, or doesn't get the thumbs up or whatever. But it doesn't mean the guy's our enemy, that now he's a... We do that, you know. As soon as a person's like, we disagree with his policies, then he's a crook, he's ill-motivated, he's stupid, he's influenced by the Mayavadis or the Gaudiya Mat or the goblins or the Americans or what do you... Yeah, I mean, there's divisions that way. You know, the Americans against the Indians or the Westerners against the Indians or the Americans against the Europeans or this group, you know, divided up in friends and enemies, friends and enemies, friends and enemies. Losing sight of Krishna. That's the thing. You know, we may have different points of view. In the spiritual world also, they disagree. It's not that everybody's of the same opinion in the spiritual world. There's disagreement in the spiritual world also, because there's individuality. But no one forgets Krishna. When we get absorbed in friends and enemies and forget Krishna, then the whole thing is lost. Then Maya got us again. Otherwise, as long as we remember Krishna, then we can see, all right, this is this, this is this, this is this, this is this, this, has, this should go here, this should go there. Or as long as this is here, we can't do anything there because it's not possible, so we have to go here. Whatever it is, management. But we're thinking of Krishna. Not that in order to somehow or other function, we have to descend to the platform of symbolic manipulation and friends and enemies and all of that stuff, and then get other people, you know, into the friends and enemies mentality so that we'll win. You lose, because now you know you're also on the platform of duality. You're meant for going beyond duality, but you came down to the duality platform and you're stuck there. So if one can get the art, stay on the spiritual platform, remember Krishna, see everything in relationship to Krishna, then touch ka moha ka shoki, you'll never be bewildered, you'll never have to lament. But you'll be able to act. All right, this is this, this is this, this is this, this is this. What is the best thing for keeping a spiritual organization free from politics? Chant Hare Krishna. Do it more. Yeah, that was Prabhupada's formula for keeping the institution, you know, reasonably free from politics. Chant Hare Krishna, get up early in the morning, attend the regular programs, hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Everybody, leaders, followers, chant and dance and take prasadam. That's how you do it. That was Prabhupada's formula. When we slack off on hearing and chanting and, you know, become all management, then management goes to hell. Prabhupada says, see that everyone is following regulative principles, then management is at your fingertips. Everyone's getting up early in the morning, everyone's chanting, everyone's hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Everybody's a devotee, so then everything's easy for your management. And people aren't attending, people aren't hearing, people aren't chanting, you're not hearing, you're not chanting, you're not reading. Where's the management going to be? It's all going to be... So Prabhupada gave that as the key. Chant Hare Krishna. Pretty simple. Well, that's what happens. We start off, and then we get bogged down. So you have to start off and keep going. That's the... Of course, that's easily said, but that's what we have to do. Start off chanting Hare Krishna, and then not stop chanting Hare Krishna. It's when we stop, that's when the problem comes. Mm-hmm. People have to be open about any issue and not discuss anything behind people's backs. That's a little bit of an extreme position. Now, there is, it's true, you know, I don't just talk about people behind their backs and fish, as Prabhupada said. But it's not that nothing can be discussed in confidence either. It's not that if, you know, if I close the door and have a confidential conversation about with you, and it happens to touch on someone, then, you know, I just committed a sin because I talked about someone behind their back. You know, there is room for segregated discussion, you know, that the appropriate people talk about the appropriate things, and it shouldn't degrade into just bad-mouthing someone needlessly. But it's not that two people can't talk about a third person without... violating the Magna Carta and the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not quite that bad.
I just said that if two devotees would have problems with each other, Prabhupada would never discuss problems with someone without inviting the other person to participate in that discussion.
I don't know that that's true. This starts to be like... you know, seven principles of whatever it is, and, you know, management books, how to manage, and, you know, don't do this unless you do that, and don't do this unless... And then it becomes Prabhupada always did, but I never... I don't know if I would say that, that Prabhupada would never, you know, he would always call in the person. No. I can think of one... particularly colorful incident, and the things were being brought to Prabhupada's attention, and Prabhupada spoke to a small group of leaders and said, go see. He didn't say, call the man in. He said, go see and give me the report. Now, it's just an example that, you know, the Prabhupada never accept unless he... That isn't necessarily true. There's a... the example that falsifies the generalization. No problem, but called in some leaders and said, go see. Give me the report. Now, as a general principle, is it good management? As far as I understand, it's good management. You don't talk about your people behind their back. You call in the relevant person and say, you know, now can we sort this out? And that's very good management. But it's not that because it's good management, it must have been what Prabhupada did. Or that it's because it's good management, it's always good management. It's a little exaggeration, maybe, in terms of my experience. Now that I think about it, Prabhupada could say all sorts of things about any of his disciples in any circumstance. Right? Why he is doing this. He is rascal. Didn't call the man, and the man could be on the other side of the world, and Prabhupada might say, why he is doing this? He is simply nonsense. Prabhupada could do that. But then the next day he could say, he is a very good boy, he's working, he's, you know, so Prabhupada had privileges. We can't imitate. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm just thinking of it, one of our, my production manager when I was at the BBT, he is dangerous. Man was in Los Angeles, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he is dangerous. And Prabhupada could say those things. And the man wanted to quit because he heard that Prabhupada, yeah, so many things. So then the report came that such and such wants to quit. Prabhupada said, how can he quit? What else will he do? He has to do this job. What else will he do? No, don't quit. But Prabhupada had the prerogative. He could speak cunningly about anyone. Good for us. That you can do when all of your people love you. That's another principle of management. First get all of your people to love you, and then you can do what you want. Yeah, we want people to, but the real thing is not just to somehow or other move things around in such a way that we get people to love us, but if we actually try to follow our spiritual master and actually try to follow Krishna's instructions, then people automatically will love you. It's not that you sort of, listen, are you on the love me or hate me side? If you're on the hate me side, get out. If you're on the love me side, you can stay. In fact, you can be promoted. And that way you get everybody to love you. That's not the idea. But what is that? Krishna says that the person who's Krishna conscious, he's dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. And just speak, again, chant Hare Krishna. I mean, just like our Indra Prabhu. He was dear to everyone. Even if there were some disagreements, this or that. But the whole world appreciated him. Why? Because he's chanting Hare Krishna. You know, what was he doing? I mean, what else was he doing? He's chanting Hare Krishna. And whatever, this, that, nothing else really counted, ultimately. Because his whole, just his main business is chanting Hare Krishna. Even if you disagree with him, say, well, you know, he's chanting Hare Krishna all the time. What can you say? So, you know, devotees all over the world. Because he's chanting Hare Krishna and serving Krishna Balaram. So serve Radha and Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. Everyone will love you. Vijitatma, Jitendriya. Sarva Bhutatma, Bhutatma. Kurvan, you'll never be entangled. Sarva Bhutatma, Bhutatma. You'll be dear to everyone, everyone will be dear to you. And even while managing, you'll not be entangled. Kurva napi nalipyate. Yeah, thank you. Okay, I think we can stop here. Hare Krishna, glorious to Srila Prabhupada.